You're the One That I Want by The Hoyden. Read by Rose. It's actually his father who suggests it. Take the rest of the summer for yourself, he says. Do something fun. Fun, Sydney repeats blankly. His father evidently takes that as agreement and warms to the subject. Get out of the country a bit. You'll have the rest of your life in Canada after all. Right, Sydney says, because he's always known that. Sydney thinks about what he could do with the requisite security trailing him. He thinks about where he could go. Then he thinks about where he could go without being bothered. Nothing that occurs to him seems particularly in the spirit of what his father suggested. And then he's at a luncheon, making conversation with Ken Dryden and Mario Lemieux, when it hits him. I'm sorry, I wonder if I could ask you a question, he says to Lemieux. Lemieux's eyebrows go up. Of course, he says easily, because he would never say no to Sydney. Few people would, and Sydney knows it's his responsibility not to abuse that. Do you know of any hockey camps in Pittsburgh that could use another instructor? He asks. Or an assistant? Assistant would be fine. Lemieux and Dryden trade a look that Sydney can't entirely decipher. Unpaid, of course, he hastens to clarify, in case that's an obstacle. Well, Lemieux says. My foundation is running a few. We rely heavily on volunteers. I'm sure we could use one more. Sydney leaves the luncheon with Lemieux's card burning a hole in his pocket. And before the week is out, it's arranged. He'll go to Pittsburgh for 2 weeks to volunteer with the children in the 5 to 8 year old group. It will be the last time he'll have purely for himself, and maybe his last chance at something like anonymity. Because after that, he'll return to Ottawa for the celebration of his 25th birthday, and announce his engagement to Prince Alexander Mikhailovich Ovechkin of Moscow. Sydney is the Prince of Nova Scotia, heir apparent to the throne, and the rest of his life will belong to Canada. Sydney played hockey his whole life. When he was 5, he announced on camera that he wanted to be an NHL player when he grew up. That was before he really understood that he'd be king one day, and that the demands of the NHL were incompatible with his responsibilities to Canada. Still, as his father often pointed out, a love of the game was positive PR, and Sydney had the best private instruction the country had to offer. His days of playing on boarding school and university teams are some of his best memories, and represent a time when he really felt connected, not set apart. He wants everyone to have the same opportunities he did. He knows that's not realistic, but he's been thinking a lot about access to instruction and the price of equipment, and he thinks there's something he can do to help. So in a way, his free summer is probably kind of work after all, but it's good work, and Sydney loves it. He's staying in downtown Pittsburgh, at the kind of hotel that doesn't bat an eyelash at accommodating his security details requirements. Within the Lemieux Foundation, only a few people know who he is for sure, and they've signed non-disclosure agreements. That won't necessarily stop people from recognizing him, but the general American public is more obsessed with British royalty than Canadian. So Sydney puts on his Lemieux Foundation hockey camp ball cap and hopes for the best. The kids don't care who he is. They're just so excited to be playing hockey, and they've all received free equipment in order to do so. It's quite the program the Lemieux Foundation is running. Free equipment provided to young kids during the season, and clinics offered on a sliding scale in the summer. It's worth thinking about further. It's customary to specialize in certain areas of philanthropy. If Sydney wants to focus on expanding physical education for Canadian youth, he doesn't think anyone is going to fight him too hard over it. By the end of the first day, he's wondering if there's any way he can do this every year. Great job today, he tells the group he's been working with. He puts out his hand for a fist bump and gets hugged around his legs instead. He looks over to where one of his fellow assistants is also getting his share of hugs. Although, with his height, the kids are practically wrapped around his knees. And they smile at each other helplessly. Can we stay? One of the kids, Katie, according to the sticker on her helmet, asks, looking up at him with big eyes. She's missing her 2 front teeth. Sydney shakes his head. No, we have to let the next people have their turn on the ice. But I'll see you guys tomorrow morning, right? When he finally herds them into the locker room, where parents and others are waiting to help them out of their gear, Sid heaves a sigh, mostly of satisfaction. He is a little beat, though, and hungry. It's not like he didn't know kids have a lot of energy, but the ones he sees on official business are usually on their very best behavior.
You new this year?
Asks the other assistant, the one who was just on the ice with him. Sydney didn't get his name. One of the kids was crying before the clinic even started, and Coach had already wrapped up introductions by the time they made it onto the ice. Yeah, hi. I'm Sydney, he says and holds out his hand. The guy takes it and his grip is firm, and his hand is a little chilly, the way it always is when you spend time on the ice without skating hard.
Hi, nice to meet you,
he says. He has a slight accent that Sydney pegs as Russian right away. His ear for accents admittedly isn't great, but he can usually pick out Russian without too much difficulty. His family has long been planning for him to marry a Russian royal, and his language study was planned accordingly, even though Sasha speaks English perfectly well and will come to Canada to live with him. Sydney thinks it will be nice to be able to meet him halfway, linguistically speaking.
My name's Yevgeny,
the guy says, and then there's that smile again, the one that takes his face from a bit hangdog to boyishly charming.
I let the kids call me Gino.
Nice to meet you, Yevgeny, Sydney says, nailing the pronunciation and enjoying the way Yevgeny's eyes flick at him in surprise.
I've done this the past 3 years. You want to grab lunch? Talk a little?
Yevgeny asks, leaning against the wall outside the locker room. Jesus, he's tall. Sydney's used to a security detail towering over him. He thinks Yevgeny must be just as tall as Joe. Joe, who is watching them both with narrowed, unimpressed eyes.
Yeah, that would be great. Let me just
let my friend know, Sydney says, and get changed. Yevgeny nods in easy agreement before thudding off to their locker room in his skates. Joe, Sydney knows, won't be nearly so agreeable about Sydney going anywhere new with a stranger. Then again, being aggressive about Sydney's safety is his job, so Sydney can hardly fault him for it.
I'll drop you off, Joe says. You know the rules. You don't leave without me.
I know, Sydney says. They had a scare once when he was 16, and Joe is never going to let that go. Not that Sydney is inclined to push it.
Go on,
Joe says gruffly, because at least he doesn't insist on following Sydney into the locker rooms anymore. The place Yevgeny suggests for lunch is apparently famous, and Sydney thinks he ought to get a few sandwiches to go for Joe and Shay. I don't think I've ever seen fries in a sandwich before, Sydney says. It's genius, and he's going to destroy at least one.
New to Pittsburgh, too?
Yevgeny says in surprise.
I'm just here for camp, Sydney says.
What about you? Yevgeny waves a hand.
I came here for school when I was 19. Then I decided to stay for graduate school.
Sydney feels unfamiliar ground here, because if there's one thing he knows how to do, it's ask people about themselves. What are you studying?
Healthcare policy, Yevgeny says.
And when Sydney smiles encouragingly, he brightens a little.
Huge problem, you know, for everyone. So I want to see how I can help.
Their waiter comes by then, and Yevgeny rattles off his order.
Pastrami, onions, 2 pickles.
With the ease of practice. And Sydney's racked with indecision. Should I get... I was thinking the corned beef, but maybe...
No,
Yevgeny says.
First time here, you get pastrami. Then you try other things.
Well, Sydney says, and because he has the sense to take recommendations from locals, he says to the waiter, same, please.
You'll like it, Yevgeny promises.
Sydney bites his lip. If I don't, are you going to hold it against me? Yevgeny tilts his head back and forth like he's considering it, but there's a smile tugging at the corners of his mouth.
Means I try harder tomorrow.
Is he... Maybe I'm picky, Sydney dares to say.
I like a challenge,
Yevgeny says, and the look on his face is a little cocky, a little competitive, like he thinks he's going to win, and oh no, Sydney is so into it. He finds himself leaning in, forearms resting on the table, and Yevgeny mirrors him. How did you get started volunteering for this camp? Sydney says, because a change of subject is needed if he's going to get through this lunch with his dignity intact. Yevgeny tells him about his neighbor with 2 daughters who started playing hockey with the Foundation's Learn to Play program, and while he's too busy during the school year, he has a little time in the summer for clinics. Then their food comes, and they're both too busy eating to make conversation. And it turns out Sydney was right. He's going to demolish the sandwich. And then he has to figure out how to sweet-talk the palace chef into recreating it. The Tang always wants to improve on things, which has been the source of a lot of tension in regards to Sydney's late-night peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. By the time Yevgeny is eating his pickles, Sydney is sitting back with a sigh. He's very full, and he doesn't regret it. The waiter leaves a check, which Yevgeny pulls towards his side of the table. Oh, let me get that, Sydney says, digging his wallet out of his pocket,
But Yevgeny is too fast. He's already handing the check and some cash to their waiter.
You didn't have to do that. You're a student, Sydney protests.
Welcome to Pittsburgh,
Yevgeny says, completely unrepentant. When they're outside, Yevgeny points in the direction of his car.
I'm that way. You have a ride?
Yeah, I'm good, Sydney says, and then shifts his weight from one foot to the other. Thanks for lunch, Yevgeny. Yevgeny looks at him for a long moment and then says,
I think your tongue knows a little Russian. Maybe you call me Zenya.
Sydney feels his face heat, which he hopes looks like a reaction to it being so hot outside. See you tomorrow, Zenya, he says. Yevgeny, Zenya, looks pleased, but also interested. And that really may not be a good idea after all if Sydney is trying to lie low.
See you tomorrow,
Zenya says, and heads down the sidewalk. Sydney blows out a breath before heading to the car. I brought lunch, he announces, holding up the plastic bag with its takeout containers as Joe starts the engine.
Thank you, Your Highness, Joe says before backing the car out.
But what will Shay eat?
Don't be mean, Sydney tells him.
Day two is just as much fun as day one. Sydney should really stop laughing when the kids fall over, but he can't help it. They're so cute, and they just get right back up again. He supposes that's because they don't have all that far to fall, and also, their bones might be made of jelly. They've split the ice up into 5 skill stations and are cycling groups through them. Sydney is working the passing station, and Zenya is across from him helping kids with puck control. A few pucks make it from his side to Zenya's, and vice versa. So they spend the camp smacking wayward pucks at each other in sharp, crisp passes.
You want to cup the puck with your blade when you get a pass, Sydney tells the next group of kids. Watch, like this.
He makes eye contact with Zenya, who sends a puck over not too fast, as if they talked about it first, so the kids can see him carefully cup the puck when he receives it.
Just like that, Sydney says. And when you pass, you do the same thing.
He passes the puck back to Zenya, being sure to emphasize the tilting his blade over the puck before shooting it.
Everyone pair up. Let's practice.
After they've wrapped up for the day and changed out of their track suits in the locker room, Zenya accompanies him out and says,
Plans for dinner?
Sydney shakes his head because he doesn't have any, unless he counts room service while watching the History Channel until Shay sighs gently and Sydney changes it to something more mutually agreeable. Zenya makes a face of exaggerated consideration.
Do you like sushi?
Sydney has eaten sushi in Japan with the Crown Prince and Princess. It was delicious, but he'd still rather eat westernized maki given the option. So he smiles at Zenya and says, I love it. Where did you want to go? Zenya purses his lips.
Where are you staying?
Downtown, Sydney says. Zenya nods and pulls out his phone.
Give me your number, I'll text you the name.
Sydney feels reasonably sure that Zenya could just tell him, but he rattles off the number and feels his phone vibrate. When he pulls it out of his pocket, he's got a text with a time and a place and a smiley face. Zenya has no idea who Sydney is, but he wants to spend time with him anyway, and it's so nice. I'll see you tonight, Sydney says, and maybe he smiles at Zenya for a bit too long, but what the hell? Sydney didn't pack a date outfit, largely because he doesn't really have one. He doesn't go on dates. He hooks up from time to time, but it doesn't seem fair to start anything with anyone when he's going to get married to someone else. If he has to have a husband picked out for him, though, he's glad it's Sasha. They're friends, of a sort, and they respect each other. And Sydney has always trusted that they'll make their marriage work just fine. He has no expectations that it will be a grand love, but he thinks they could be good to each other. Also, Sasha is hilarious, and there are worse things than to be married to someone who can make him laugh. The thing with Zenya, though, he's pretty sure this is a date, and, well, he has 2 weeks. Zenya knows he's only here for camp. Why not go on a date or two? It's his last chance, after all. He's still stuck on what to wear, though, and 10 minutes of looking at his hotel closet in despair have not solved his dilemma. He makes a low, pathetic noise before resting his forehead against the closet door. Joe is doing something with his guns at the desk.
Jeans and that damn Lululemon shirt, he says without looking up.
Sydney looks at him suspiciously.
Isn't that a little casual? Well, it's not a state visit, Joe says.
Sydney puts on both, looks in the mirror, and sighs.
Are you sure? Your Highness, please don't make me evaluate the junk in your trunk.
Thorny, Sid groans.
But he goes with it, because most of the time he has a prescribed dress code to adhere to, and without it he's a little at sea. Joe must know more than he does about what people wear on probably dates with Russian graduate students. It's warm out, but not unpleasantly so, and Zenya's waiting outside the restaurant.
Hi, Sydney says when he gets close.
Zenya's face breaks into a smile.
Hi,
he says, and he sounds so honestly happy to see Sydney that it makes Sydney feel a little flustered.
You walk here?
Yeah, Sydney says. Nice night for it, I thought. Shay accompanied him from the hotel, but fell back when they were half a block away. Sydney knows he'll stay nearby while he and Zenya have dinner, and then follow him back. Sydney has his phone and his panic button, which is the compromise they've worked out over the years.
Nice, yes,
Zenya says, and then ushers him inside. The restaurant is small, but the tables are full, except for one in the corner that their hostess leads them to. It's a little more private, and it occurs to Sydney that Zenya must have asked for it.
Have you been here before? Sydney asks.
It's apparently more of a fresh seafood place that specializes in sushi than a Japanese restaurant. Zenya nods. The low lighting does interesting things to his face and makes everything seem a little intimate.
I might ask you for some recommendations then, Sydney says, leaning forward a bit.
Whatever Zenya was going to say in response is forestalled by the server, who takes their drink order and leaves them to peruse the sushi menu.
You like spicy?
Zenya asks. Maybe it's the table, or just his long legs, but his knees are resting against Sydney's. Sydney wrinkles his nose.
A little spicy is okay, he says cautiously.
Soft-shelled crab?
Absolutely.
Caviar?
Sydney licks his lips.
No arguments from me.
Zenya looks at him for a long moment, and it makes a shiver run down Sydney's spine. They gobble together their order with almost no fuss, although Sydney has to be talked into a roll with jalapenos.
You'll like it,
Zenya assures him.
If not, I'll eat all of it.
Sydney laughs at Zenya's martyred expression, and Zenya smiles in response, his tongue poking out of his mouth. It's a ridiculously charming evening, and Sydney can't get over the novelty of no expectations. Zenya wants to know about his favorite hockey teams, and Sydney doesn't have to give his stock, non-committal answer. He gets to tell Zenya that he was born a Habs fan, but he loved watching Steve Yzerman play.
But Mario,
Zenya says, aggrieved. Of course Mario, Sydney says. There's no one like him. He nudges Zenya's knee with his. When they've demolished the last of their sushi, Zenya waves the last piece of yellowfish and jalapeno roll to Sydney, who accepts. Their waiter comes by to see if they want dessert, but Zenya looks at Sydney and shakes his head.
Just a check, please, Sydney says.
And when the waiter comes back with it, Sydney holds his hand out for it and refuses to relinquish it.
I asked you, Zenya points out.
He's pretty sure that the starving graduate student cliché exists for a reason.
Please, Sydney says softly.
Let me. Zenya shrugs in acquiescence. When they leave the restaurant, it's dark out and Sydney doesn't see Shay. But he knows Shay can see him. He looks up at Zenya, and he doesn't want to go, not just yet. Zenya must feel the same because he says,
there's a good ice cream place around the corner.
They walk close to one another, arms brushing until they arrive at the little storefront. It's doing a brisk business, and in short order, Sydney has chocolate ice cream in a cone, and Zenya has salted caramel.
Walk you back?
Zenya offers. Sydney thinks, oh, why not? It really is a beautiful night for a walk, and by the time they're approaching Sydney's hotel, they're both finishing their cones. Sydney's just licking the stray bit of chocolate from his finger when he slows to a stop near the hotel's entrance.
Thank you, Sydney says. I had a really good time.
Me too,
Zenya says, and he's standing temptingly close. I'll see you tomorrow morning. Zenya nods, but he's not stepping away or saying goodnight. He's leaning a little closer, in fact, and Sydney thinks, fuck it. Sydney goes up on his toes a little and presses his lips against Zenya's. For a moment, he wonders if he's read this all wrong, but then Zenya kisses him back, and for all that it's relatively brief, it lights him up. When they break apart, Zenya looks just as affected.
Good night,
he says, his voice low and rough. Good night, Sydney says, and makes himself walk into the hotel alone. Well, not precisely alone. Shay joins him as he waits for the elevator. He doesn't say anything on the way up the elevator, but in Sydney's suite, he starts humming something under his breath. Sydney has a terrible ear, but is that the song from Grease? Day 3 of camp brings 2 meltdowns. One is related to hockey. Olivia gets frustrated with the skating drill, and the other might be something else entirely.
considering Noah did not look like a happy camper when he stepped on the ice this morning.
I've got him, he tells Xenia, who nods.
They're supervising a game of sharks and minnows tag, one of the games they use to break up drill sessions and give the kids a less structured playtime.
Hey, buddy, he says to Noah softly. Let's go over to the bench, huh?
Noah keeps weeping, but nods his head and skates with Sydney over to the boards. Sydney opens the door so they can sit on the bench together.
Seems like you had a rough morning, Sydney says.
Noah sniffles loudly. He doesn't stop crying, though, which feels like a step in the right direction.
What's going on?
Sydney asks as gently as he can. Noah is quiet, swinging his legs back and forth a little.
My brother's leaving,
he finally says.
And nope, the tears are back.
Sydney helps him take off his helmet and then wraps an arm around him. He's leaving? How come? And that gets him Noah's face mashed against his chest, and the whole story comes spilling out. Noah's older brother is leaving for what sounds like a hockey program at a boarding school.
He's really going to miss you, Sydney says.
He feels his heart clench because he knows that must be true. He was sent to school in Toronto when Taylor was about the same age as Noah, and he missed her so much. But he wouldn't go if it weren't important, right? Noah snuffles into Sydney's track jacket.
Yeah,
he agrees, voice watery. Sydney rubs his back a little.
He'll be home for the break, I bet, he says, although he doesn't know for sure.
He leans over to grab the box of tissue that's next to the scorekeeping booth, and offers it to Noah, who immediately blows his nose. Sydney thinks his jacket is a lost cause at this point. He'll have to send it down to the hotel laundry when he gets back.
Maybe you'll go to his school one day, too, if you work hard, Sydney says.
You want to get back on the ice and give it a shot?
Noah nods.
He puts his helmet back on, and Sydney helps him fasten the strap. When they get back, the next set of drills is about to start, which is good timing. Sydney skates Noah over to his group, who are listening to Xenia outline what they'll be doing.
Everything okay?
Xenia murmurs, when the kids have lined up in front of the little cone obstacle course.
I think so, Sydney says.
Keep an eye on him for me?
Yes, go,
Xenia says, and smacks him on the ass in the direction of the 4-on-4 pond hockey zone. Sydney's not sure how much he helped Noah, but it feels good that he was able to try. After camp is over, Sydney asks Xenia if he'd like to go to lunch, but Xenia shakes his head.
Can't this afternoon, but I'll text you later if you're free tonight.
Sydney's a little disappointed to be eating lunch alone, but he agrees. Several hours later, he gets a text that says,
Do you like mini golf?
Yes, he texts back. When and where? Xenia sends the details, then adds,
Don't be mad when I win.
Oh, please, Sydney says out loud. Hockey is Canada's national sport, so Sydney has always been expected to show some facility with the game. But he also spends a lot of time golfing for charity, and there's a little mini golf course at the palace. So in summary, he's going to own Xenia. Not that he has any intention of telling Xenia that up front. It's a typical mini golf course, all bright colors and weird obstacles, and there are some families and a few groups of teenagers elsewhere on the course. He and Xenia pause in front of the first round, and Xenia looks at him, a little smirk on his face.
Want to make things interesting?
Xenia asks. Sydney surveys the round in front of him. He can sink it in two, he's pretty sure. What did you have in mind?
Winner buys dinner,
Xenia says. Sydney purses his lips.
Really? Dinner? That's what you're going for.
You want something else?
Xenia asks, and
oh god, Sydney does. Because Xenia's brand of cockiness really does it for him, apparently.
Sydney licks his lips and says, Let's start with dinner. Xenia's face when Sydney gets a hole-in-one in the first round is priceless.
Nice,
Xenia says, but he looks like he means the opposite of that. Just lucky, I guess, Sydney says innocently. Sydney smokes him on the next four holes, and Xenia looks progressively more incredulous. And finally, completely outraged.
You hustled me, he accuses.
You have home course advantage, Sydney reminds him. It only gets worse from there. And also, somehow better. They're both inclined to competitive douchebaggery, and Sydney keeps laughing while trying to chirp Xenia. And Xenia is hilariously put out over his ball's disinclination to go to its home.
You have to give me some room,
Sydney insists, giggling a little when Xenia gets all up on him in a blatant attempt at interference.
You need a handicap,
Xenia says, and kisses his neck just as Sydney putts. The ball goes wide of the hole by a large margin. Is that how it's going to be? Sydney asks, narrowing his eyes. By the 12th hole, they're making out behind the fake mountain. Sydney is sucking on Xenia's tongue when he hears the group on the other side making a ruckus. Come on, we have to finish this hole and move on.
Finish you?
Xenia mutters before kissing him again. Just the right amount of sloppy to make Sydney's knees go weak. They make it to the end of the course, though neither of them are trying very hard anymore. Largely because Sydney is ahead by such a large margin that they both know who's going to win. Xenia says that he's entitled to pick where they're going for dinner, and when Sydney agrees, he points to the concession stand and, well, it's not quite what Sydney was picturing when he was thinking about taking Xenia out for dinner, but there's something great about sitting at a picnic table with hot dogs and funnel cake. Xenia stretches his long legs out under the table, and Sydney doesn't mind the encroachment on his space one bit. The other tables are occupied by a few families, one older couple and a noisy group of teenagers. Sydney still has his Lemieux Foundation hat on, but maybe he doesn't even need it. No one's paying them any attention at all. Sydney worries about what it will cost him to give up this freedom now that he's tasted it. Xenia pushes the plate with the last of the funnel cake at him. Oh no, please, go ahead, Sydney says reflexively.
You won,
Xenia reminds him and nudges the plate forward again.
Unless you want something else.
The heated look in Xenia's eyes makes Sydney's throat go dry. Do you want to give me a ride back to my hotel? Sydney only just rescues the last of the funnel cake from Xenia's swift disposal of their trash, and he makes eye contact with Shay, who has been waiting a few tables over. He gets a text a few seconds later that says, cleared for transport, and knows that Shay will tail them if Sydney gets into Xenia's car. Sydney does. He was expecting something a little more decrepit, but maybe Xenia doesn't fit the starving graduate student stereotype after all, because the car is pretty nice. Xenia kisses him slow and spine-tinglingly good before he turns the key in the ignition. Sydney has a suite with a connecting door to the room Shay and Joe are using. The rule is, the connecting door stays unlocked, but Sydney can close the bedroom door in his suite for privacy. He pulls Xenia inside the bedroom and manages to tow the door shut between kisses.
Get these off,
Xenia complains, pulling at one of Sydney's belt loops before helping himself to a double handful of Sydney's ass. Okay, Sydney says breathlessly. He strips off his shirt before shimmying out of his shorts, and Xenia takes the opportunity to do the same before pushing him onto the bed. Sydney hits it with a laugh that's cut short when Xenia joins him, covers Sydney's body with his, and gets back to the very serious business of kissing. By the time Sydney's lips feel like they're buzzing, and he's had ample opportunity to explore the long line of Xenia's neck, Xenia is hooking his fingertips into the waist of Sydney's boxer briefs.
Can I?
Xenia asks, his mouth next to Sydney's ear. He bites gently at the lobe, and Sydney shudders and says, Yes, please. Xenia scoots down the bed and peels off Sydney's underwear slowly. He gets them about halfway down Sydney's thighs before he kisses Sydney low on his stomach. And then, like he can't help himself, he sucks the head of Sydney's cock into his mouth and groans. Oh, God, Sydney says faintly. He wants to make Xenia feel good, too, but Xenia pulls his boxer briefs the rest of the way off and rests a forearm over his hips. And then all Sydney can do is take it. He's trying to be quiet about it, but it's probably a lost cause. Xenia meets his eyes frequently, and whenever Xenia hits on something that makes Sydney squirm or pant or moan, he doubles down, tonguing Sydney's cock and sucking just right. And when he strokes Sydney's balls and hollows his cheeks, Sydney gasps and scrabbles at his shoulders and says, I'm gonna... Xenia pulls off and jerks Sydney until he comes all over his stomach. Come up here, Sydney says, still breathing heavily. He pulls Xenia down for some lazy, sloppy kisses, and when he feels less wrung out, he rolls Xenia over on his back. He's always felt inhibited during hookups. Mostly they're nice and they feel good, but he never really lets go. He has an image to maintain and expectations to meet, even in the privacy of the bedroom. But Xenia doesn't know who he is, so Sydney can say, I want you to come in my mouth. Xenia shudders and pushes Sydney's head down and, oh yeah, he can work with that. He settles himself between Xenia's legs and shows him what he's got. And if Sydney wants to moan around Xenia's cock a little, like he's dying for it, if he wants to urge Xenia's hands into his air, if he wants to lick and suck so greedily that everything is a slick mess, he can. And he does until Xenia says, oh, fuck, and comes down Sydney's throat just like Sydney wanted.
He rests his head against Xenia's thigh for a moment, while they both try to catch their breath. Xenia pets his hair with a clumsy hand, but it feels good. Everything feels good right now, and Sydney sighs in satisfaction before pulling himself up toward the head of the bed. And he is further pleased when Xenia pecks him on the lips before gathering him in for a cuddle. Sydney's a little bit of a mess, his own cum smeared over his chest, but he's not inclined to move yet, and evidently neither is Xenia. In fact, Sydney's eyelids are feeling a little heavy, and he thinks he'll just close them for a few minutes, and then he'll definitely get out of bed to clean up. Sydney wakes up to the phone ringing. The actual phone on the bedside table, not his cell phone, which who even knows where. He has to lean over and grab the receiver, and it takes him more than one try because there's an arm around his waist. Xenia. Hello? He says.
Your Highness, you are going to be late,
Joe says. Sydney looks at the alarm clock, swears, apologizes, and hangs up. Wake up, he tells Xenia, and shakes his shoulder gently. Xenia blinks his eyes open, looking pretty out of it, and says suspiciously,
What time?
Late, Sydney says. He jumps out of bed and hurries into the bathroom. He's probably got just enough time to shower, but he'll have to eat breakfast in the car for sure. He's soaping up in the shower when Xenia opens the glass door and joins him. It's a shame they don't have time to enjoy it, because he thinks they really would. But they're going to be late, and Sydney hates letting people down. They brush their teeth, and Sydney pulls out the camp t-shirt they gave him and offers it to Xenia, before pulling on his own clothes. When he's dressed, he hurriedly makes a couple of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches in the kitchenette outside the bedroom. Shaymay thinks he's ridiculous for always wanting a certain brand of peanut butter and jelly and some bread when he's traveling, but there's no denying that it comes in handy. On their way out, he says, Here, and hands Xenia a sandwich. Do you need to pick up your skates? Xenia takes a bite of the sandwich and makes a small face, but he continues chewing.
No, in my trunk,
he says. His car is waiting outside, which means that Joe definitely called valet for them, and Sydney will have to thank him later. Xenia drives them to the rink with a casual disregard for the posted speed limits, with the result that they get there just as the Zamboni is making its first pass. Sydney breathes a sigh of relief. When camp is over for the morning and they're taking off their skates in the locker room, Sydney has an intense debate with himself about whether he should ask Xenia if he wants to hang out again. Sydney would really like to, but he's got the vague idea that the operative word in casual summer fling is casual. Xenia saves him from himself by saying,
You need a ride back?
Sydney accepts. On the drive back, Xenia tells him about the conference paper he's working on, and the edits he has to finish by tomorrow.
It's a group paper, you know, so everyone works on sections, then makes changes, then everything is a whole mess, so RPI is going to kill us if we don't make the deadline.
Sydney makes a sympathetic noise.
That sounds intense, he says.
Xenia nods glumly and pulls up to the curb outside the hotel.
You free tomorrow night, maybe?
He asks. It's incredible not to have to check his official calendar and his personal calendar. He can just say, Yeah, I'm free. Xenia brightens and looks a little relieved, like he was worried Sydney might say no.
I'll text you when I'm done, probably around 5.
Sounds good. Sydney makes to open the door, then hesitates. I had a really good time last night, he says, because he feels like he's supposed to say something, and he thinks that might be it. Xenia puts a hand on his shoulder and leans in close. He looks Sydney in the eye, and when Sydney doesn't move away, Xenia tilts the brim of Sydney's hat up and kisses him slow and sweet and perfect.
Me too,
Xenia says softly.
Tomorrow?
Tomorrow, Sydney agrees and gets out of the car. He's smiling to himself, and even Joe's raised eyebrow when he steps into the elevator with Sydney doesn't dampen his spirits. On Friday, they do more skating drills with the kids, which means a lot of cones on the ice and skating around the circles. Sydney didn't expect to get so attached to them, but when Noah tells him he can't wait until camp again on Monday, it makes his heart clench. Xenia looks a little peaky, like he didn't get much sleep. You okay? Sydney asks in the locker room after. Xenia grunts a response that sounds affirmative and struggles to pull off his skates.
Almost done with the paper, he says. I have to finish a few things, and we send it in. Text you after?
Sounds good, Sydney says. He frowns. You sure you don't need a nap? Xenia's mouth twists into a rueful smile.
Grad school, he says by way of explanation. I'll sleep when I'm dead, or when I graduate.
Sydney raises his eyebrows. Okay, but seriously, you can grab a nap first. Xenia squeezes his shoulder.
I'll text you, he says.
Sydney is starting to get the idea that Xenia is incredibly stubborn.
Because that sounds like nobody else I know, Joe says in the drive back to the hotel when Sydney complains about it.
Well, Sydney says. When he finally gets a text, it's close to 7. He'd been wondering if he ought to text Xenia instead.
Sorry, fell asleep. Dinner?
Xenia texts. Sydney does not chirp him about the nap, largely because Xenia really needed it. Definitely, he texts back. Sydney wants to treat Xenia to a good steak dinner to celebrate him turning his paper in, so he asks for a recommendation, and Xenia obliges. Dinner is excellent, and Sydney is favorably impressed by the kitchen's attempt at poutine. It's not on the menu, but when Sydney described what he wanted, they were game to oblige. It's a lovely evening, and the weather is perfect for sitting on the rooftop deck.
More wine? Sydney asks Xenia.
They've already killed a bottle. A second is more than Sydney would generally indulge in, but right now he feels like he can do things he normally wouldn't. Here with Xenia, he feels safe. They're both tipsy by the end of dinner. They make sure Xenia's car will be fine where it is and climb into a taxi. When they arrive, Xenia gives Sydney a hand out of the car, which is ridiculous.
I'm not that drunk, Sydney protests.
Xenia pulls him close.
I know,
he says, and keeps his arm around Sydney's shoulder as they head inside. They are undoubtedly not as quiet as they hope when Sydney lets them into his hotel room. There's no way Shay missed the sound of Xenia bumping into the TV stand while trying to kiss Sydney and also take off his shirt. There's no way Shay missed Sydney laughing when Xenia grumbles at his belt.
Too hard. Take it off.
Xenia complains after a few attempts, and Sydney giggles in the middle of trying to kiss Xenia's jawline. When they're finally naked in bed, the mood is just as low-key. They kiss for a while, slow and a little sloppy, and when Xenia takes both of their cocks in his hand and jerks them off, Sydney feels like he comes completely unspooled, orgasm rendering him utterly relaxed. Xenia comes shortly after against Sydney's hip, and his satisfied groan makes Sydney smile. Are you going to fall asleep? Sydney murmurs into the afterglow. Xenia's been stroking his thumb idly over Sydney's hip, and he stills.
I can go,
he says carefully. Stay, Sydney says.
Stay if you want.
Xenia relaxes.
Okay,
he says, and Sydney closes his eyes. There's a bit of light streaming in through the crack in the curtains when Sydney wakes up the next morning. He feels a little dehydrated, but overall pretty great. When he looks at the other side of the bed, Xenia has his face mashed in his pillow, and he looks like he's still fast asleep. Sydney smiles to himself and eases out of bed to go to the bathroom and pull on a bathrobe, then out into the sitting area to order breakfast. He taps gently on Joe and Shay's door before poking his head in. Did you get breakfast? He asks quietly, because, as he expected, Shay is sleeping since he's working nights this trip.
Yes, Your Highness, Joe says, more long-sufferingly than Sydney feels is warranted.
Real food? Sydney persists. Given the option, Joe would just eat jerky for every meal and doesn't see anything wrong with that.
I ate all your peanut butter, Joe says.
Oh, you did not! Sydney sputters and shuts the door again. Sydney makes sure Joe was just teasing and eats a spoonful of peanut butter before heading back into the bedroom. Xenia is still asleep, although he's rolled over onto his back. Sydney crawls back into bed with his phone and avoids his email by playing Candy Crush. When room service arrives, Sydney goes to answer the door. He's just got everything set out on the table when Xenia ambles in, wearing his boxers and nothing else. Morning, Sydney says.
I wasn't sure.
Do you want coffee or tea?
Yes,
Xenia says. He dumps a terrifying amount of cream and sugar in his coffee, before setting tea to steep in the little pot. When he's finished his coffee and is starting on his tea, he looks much more alert.
Any plans today?
He asks. Nothing set in stone, Sydney hedges, because he knows better than to open himself up to an invitation without a graceful way to decline if he actually can't go.
You're only here for the next week, right?
Xenia says. Sydney nods.
Should see more than the rink, especially if it's your first time in Pittsburgh.
Any recommendations? Xenia thinks it over.
Lots of museums. The zoo. Too bad it's not football season, but there's baseball.
Are the Pirates playing here today? Sydney asks. Xenia looks around for his phone and eventually heads back into the bedroom. When he leans over to fish it out of a pile of clothes on the floor, Sydney's treated to a phenomenal view of his long, long legs and exceptional backside.
As it turns out, the pirates have a home game, and Xenia makes a triumphant noise after a few minutes of poking at his phone.
I've got tickets,
he says, and Sydney smiles at him and pours him another cup of coffee. Xenia goes home for a change of clothes, but meets Sydney back at the hotel so they can walk across the bridge to PNC Park. Sydney made Joe go with him to the nearby store to buy a pirate's t-shirt and hat, so he feels he's efficiently blending into the crowd. Joe isn't happy when he learns where their seats are located, but Sydney is delighted. He's thrown out the first pitch for the Jays and watched their games from the skybox. He's never sat in the cheap seats in his life. They're surrounded by college students and families with kids, and they have a beautiful view of the skyline. All in all, there are much worse ways to spend a sunny afternoon than taking in a baseball game, drinking terrible beer, and enjoying Xenia's arm on the back of his seat. There are a couple of times when people look at him a little funny. Like they think it might be him, but there's no way it could be. Sydney does his best to ignore them and chat with Xenia, and no one actually approaches him. The game goes to one extra inning, but then the Pirates eke out a win, and it's over. Just as well, because baseball is clearly not exactly Xenia's thing, although he was amiable enough. Thanks for going with me, Sydney says as they're leaving the park. It's starting to rain, but it's only a 10-minute walk back. And for the tickets, you didn't have to do that. Xenia shakes his head.
Don't worry about it, he says. Easier to buy together anyway.
Still, Sydney says, and then a smattering of fat raindrops hit the ground. A few minutes later, the skies open up. They're in the middle of the bridge, moving with the crowd. It's not like they can run for cover.
At least it's warm,
Xenia says, smiling wryly. His hair is plastered to his head, and his t-shirt is clinging to his skin. Yeah, Sydney says. When Xenia catches him staring, he stares at Sydney right back. And nothing seems as urgent as going back to his hotel room with Xenia right this second. They strip off their wet clothes in the bathroom, and the chill of the air conditioning gives Sydney goosebumps. Shower? He suggests. And Xenia nods, never taking his eyes off of Sydney. And well, the shower accomplishes its purpose of warming them both up, in more ways than one. Xenia is miles of slick skin and muscle, and if there's anything better than being pressed up against him and kissing him, Sydney doesn't know what it is. He might have an idea, though, based on the way Xenia is holding his ass with both hands and letting his fingertips drift in exploratory touches closer to his hole. You want to? Sydney asks. Xenia's eyes are dark and his mouth is reddened.
If you want.
Show me what you've got, Sydney says and grins. They dry off, but not very well, and Sydney grabs lube and condoms from his bathroom kit on their way to bed. They're already pretty wound up from the shower, and it's not very long before Xenia is coaxing Sydney on his hands and knees and opening the lube. Xenia doesn't stretch him fast enough for Sydney's taste. Come on, Sydney says breathlessly, as Xenia twists two fingers inside of him. Sometime today? Xenia smacks him gently on the ass, but gives him three. And Sydney moans and drops down to his elbows. Xenia's fingers are long and good, but he's ready now. For once in his life, he does not have to worry about anyone blabbing to a gossip magazine or a website that the Prince of Canada is a cock-hungry slut, and he fucking wants it. Come on, get your dick in me, Sydney demands. Xenia pulls his fingers out, and Sydney can hear him opening the condom.
You get big ones,
Xenia says, and Sydney can hear the smirk in his voice.
Buy them just for me, or you only like big dicks.
Fuck me and find out, Sydney says, and then he gasps as Xenia eases his cock in. He is stretched wide around Xenia, and he feels so full that he can't help moaning when Xenia pulls out and pushes back in slowly. Xenia keeps a slow pace for a bit, grinding his hips a little, and it feels great, but Sydney wants more. That all you've got? He says. Xenia pauses, and Sydney can feel him shifting slightly.
Tell me if it's too much,
he says, and he gets a good grip on Sydney's hips. Sydney turns his head just enough to look at Xenia. Try me. And oh, Xenia does. He gives it to Sydney harder, a little faster, and when Sydney grips the headboard to push back into it, it changes the angle to something mind-blowing. When Xenia leans down to brace his arms on the bed on either side of Sydney, it's all Xenia's chest rubbing against his back. Xenia's cock getting him just right. Xenia's lips against his neck. Xenia muttering in Russian, telling Sydney he's so good for him. Sydney barely gets a hand on himself before he's coming hard. Zenya goes still, and he kisses Sydney's neck gently.
Okay,
he asks. Oh, yeah, Sydney manages, panting.
You want me to pull out?
Sydney moans and squeezes his ass around Zenya's cock. I'm good. You can keep going. He's confused when Zenya pulls out anyway, but Zenya coaxes him on his back. And sure, Sydney can work with that. He's not going to come again, but with his knees over Zenya's shoulder and Zenya pressed close and panting against his neck as he fucks Sydney with short, hard strokes, it doesn't seem to matter. It feels intimate, like everything has been stripped away and it's just Sydney and Zenya and the quiet, vulnerable groan Zenya makes when he comes.
The next week passes too quickly. Sydney's so proud of how the kids are progressing. They try so hard and never seem to lose their enthusiasm. He spends his off time with Zenya more often than not, and all in all, it's a slice of heaven. He wishes it didn't have to end. But no matter how much he wishes otherwise, Friday comes. The kids all cluster around at the end of class to say goodbye. I'll miss you, Katie tells him. I'll miss you too, Sydney says and pats her helmet. Thank you, Noah says. See you next summer. Sydney doesn't have the heart to correct him. Coach thanks all the volunteers for their time and effort, and Sydney shakes hands and accepts a few back-slapping hugs. And then Zenya drives him back to his hotel for the last time. He puts the car in park and leaves the engine running.
You're leaving for your flight now, right?
He says. Sydney nods. When the flight was booked for him, there wasn't any reason not to leave as soon as camp was over. Zenya sighs and rubs the back of his neck. It's a long moment before he mutters,
You want to text, maybe?
Sydney does. He really, really does. But it's not a good idea. It's not fair. Not to Zenya, not to Sasha, and not to himself. This has been a vacation, and a great one, but he has to go back to his responsibilities now. And even if he and Sasha never have something like this, Sydney has to commit to trying. I'm sorry, Sydney says. And he means it. He didn't expect the sharp pang of grief that makes his throat feel tight. I really... You've been great. I had a great time. The raw look of disappointment on Zenya's face makes him want to take it back. To say that they can text, that they'll see each other again. But Sydney can't. They can't.
Will you be here next year?
Zenya asks finally.
I'd love to, Sydney says and swallows. I don't think it'll work out, though.
Zenya nods shortly. He starts and then stops. Then he leans in and kisses Sydney, long and bittersweet, and then says in Russian,
Be happy.
You too, Sydney says in kind, his voice scratchy. He kisses Zenya one last time and gets out of the car. Joe and Shay are waiting in the lobby with their luggage, and Sydney stays silent as they load up the rental car and drive to the airport. On the plane, Joe says with gentle sympathy,
Oh, kid.
I don't want to talk about it, Sydney says. And puts in his earphones and closes his eyes. It's probably a good thing that Sydney's so busy when he gets back to Ottawa. He doesn't have time to think about Zenya, not really. There's so much to be arranged. His birthday celebration, charity work that was delayed while he was in Pittsburgh, and a lot of back and forth about his upcoming engagement. Sydney doesn't understand the fuss. It's not like it will be a surprise to anyone. Sasha is the spare. Once he was third in line for the throne, but the untimely death of his eldest brother means that he is now second. Still, it's been no secret that Russia and Canada have long wanted to solidify their ties, and the understanding between their families has remained unaltered. They'll announce the engagement 3 days after Sydney's birthday. The wedding will be the following May, and then Sasha will come to Canada as Sydney's prince consort. He's expecting to hear from Sasha before he does, but he's not entirely surprised that Sasha wakes him out of a dead sleep at 3 a.m. Sasha? Sydney croaks into his phone.
Hello, kitten,
Sasha says, and he sounds far too serious and somber. Sydney rubs his eyes. Are you okay? He asks. Because Sasha usually remembers time zones unless he's drunk dialing.
Yes,
Sasha says.
Well, no. Okay. The thing is...
Sydney waits, and then pulls his phone away from his ear, wondering if the call was dropped. Since it appears not, he puts it back to his ear. Are you still there? He hears Sasha sigh over the line.
Yes. I'm sorry to wake you up, but I wanted to tell you before the news breaks.
Tell me what? Sydney says, heaving himself up to a sitting position.
Misha. Misha is going to abdicate,
Sasha says heavily. Misha, your brother Misha? Sydney asks, because he can't have heard right. He must have misunderstood.
Yes, that Misha,
Sasha says, a little impatiently. It still doesn't make sense to Sydney's sleep-addled brain. But why? Sasha heaves another sigh.
He fell in love with impossible girl. Mama and Papa told him she can't be queen, and Misha, well, he'd rather give up the crown than give up her.
Oh, Sydney says softly. It hits him in a tender, bruised place. 3 weeks ago, he would have said Misha was selfish and irresponsible. Now, well, it still seems selfish, but Sydney can understand him a little.
I'm sorry, kitten,
Sasha says, and only he could sound this sincere while calling Sydney that ridiculous pet name he settled on when they were 16 and their families reached an understanding.
Mama and Papa, they already decided that Papa would step down, focus on his health. They were already planning Misha's coronation.
Is your dad okay? Sydney says. He's heard nothing to the contrary.
His heart's not good,
Sasha says.
Doctors say the best thing is rest, no stress. He and Mama are going to live in Sochi. Retire, you know?
That sounds nice, Sydney says inanely.
Yeah,
Sasha says, and he sounds wistful.
But it means I can't come to Canada. I can't marry you.
Sydney makes a fist in his bed sheets and sits silently alone in his room, only his bedside lamp illuminating the space.
Sydney?
Sasha says. I'm still here, Sydney says. I always thought.
I know,
Sasha says sympathetically. They're both quiet for another minute. And then Sydney says, well, shit. It startles a half laugh out of Sasha.
Shit is right. It's going to be a huge mess. Diplomatic nightmare. They're going to offer you every other prince we have just to make things right.
That's a lot of princes, Sydney says. There are like 50 of them.
You'll have your pick, I promise.
Sydney pinches the bridge of his nose. I still kind of wish it were you, he admits. I was used to the idea, you know?
Me too,
Sasha says, gentle in the way he's often been with Sydney, despite his usual brash demeanor. It's what made Sydney think that being married to Sasha would be okay, if it had to be someone his parents picked out for him. And now it won't be Sasha. Now Sydney's going to have to marry a stranger, an actual stranger, someone of sufficient rank that everything will be smoothed over.
It's probably going to hit the news in another hour,
Sasha says apologetically.
Our Chamberlain is talking to yours right now. Your parents are going to be upset, I think.
Yeah, probably, Sydney says. Thank you for calling me. Sasha makes a rude noise.
As if I wouldn't. We're friends, no matter what. I have your back.
Thank you, Sydney says again.
Stop thanking me, weird Canadian,
Sasha says fondly.
Go back to sleep if you can.
Sydney knows he won't be able to, but he says okay. They say their goodbyes. He sits there, his mind whirling and unable to settle. 20 minutes later, his present is urgently requested in his father's study. As it turns out, Sasha was wrong. His parents aren't upset. They're furious. Within a few days, Sydney has a stack of dossiers. The short list, the Chamberlain tells him, all the Russian princes fit to marry. Sydney dutifully reads through them, but he doesn't know how he's supposed to pick. The dossiers list rank, family, education, charitable work, a few sanitized interests. He tells himself to eliminate 5 of the 15, but when he does, it feels arbitrary. None of them seem particularly better than the rest. They're all just names and faces on a page. Sydney's met some of them before, but that was back when he was expecting to marry Sasha, so he was just trying to keep names straight, not evaluate anyone as consort material.
This one likes dogs? Sydney says doubtfully.
Great. Definitely marry him then, his younger sister Taylor says, snapping the gum that she is definitely not supposed to be chewing.
You're not helping, Sydney tells her, biting his cheek to keep from smiling. It's ridiculous.
He tells Sasha this the next time he calls.
Who do they give you?
Sasha asks. Sydney picks the first dossier off the stack.
Nikolai Kuhlman?
Pass,
Sasha says flatly. Alexander Radulov?
Face like a shoe. Next.
Sergei Bobrovsky? Sasha snorts.
He's got a girl he's been crazy about since forever. You don't want to get in the middle of that.
Ugh, Sydney says feelingly.
Listen,
Sasha says.
You're coming for the coronation anyway. Stay a little longer. You can meet the ones you're interested in.
I'm not interested in any of them, Sydney says, well aware that he's sulking.
That's because you have a bad list. I'll make a new one and send it. Then you meet them, you talk a little, you find one you like, yes?
I guess, Sydney says reluctantly. It's not like he has a choice. He has to marry a Russian prince. If it can't be Sasha, it would be good for it to at least be someone he likes spending time with.
He arrives in Moscow the night before the coronation with security and his valet in tow. The deputy chamberlain argued mightily to be included, but Sydney really does not want more of an audience for this than is necessary. His parents made their excuses, which he's reasonably sure is code for still incredibly angry at Moscow for the dissolution of a 10-year-old understanding. But since Sydney is attending, everyone is apparently pretending that everything is absolutely fine. By the time they're all settled into their suite, it's late, and Sydney is in his pajamas, so he's not expecting a knock on his door. When he answers, his valet pokes his head in.
Your Highness, Flower says. His Highness Prince Alexander requests a word.
Sydney lets Flower bundle him into a robe and then goes out into the sitting room of his suite to find Sasha still in a suit, looking at the fireplace.
Sasha? Sydney says, and Sasha jerks around to look at him. It takes Sydney a long moment to realize that Sasha is painfully uncertain of his welcome, like he expects Sydney to kick him out.
Are you okay?
Sydney asks as he steps close. He puts one hand lightly on Sasha's shoulder. When he does, Sasha takes a deep, unsteady breath and wraps Sydney up in a tight hug. Sydney's not sure what he's supposed to do with a no longer intended, but he hugs Sasha back, because it feels like Sasha needs it.
Sorry, Sasha murmurs.
Sydney just keeps hugging him back. For what?
A whole mess,
Sasha says. His voice is rough with exhaustion. It's not your fault, Sydney reminds him. He coaxes Sasha into sitting on the sofa and says, do you want a drink? Sasha pats the cushion next to him in lieu of an answer, and Sydney sits down. He lets Sasha put an arm around his shoulder with no comment and just waits him out. Sasha starts talking after a few moments of quiet.
It wasn't supposed to be me, he says. How will you know you're ready?
Sydney doesn't expect to ascend the throne for several decades, at least. And unlike Sasha, he's always known what his future had in store. Or he did, anyway. Your parents wouldn't let this go forward if they didn't think you could handle it, he says, and leans into Sasha's side a little.
You've always been so reasonable, Sasha says,
a note of fond complaint in his voice.
One of us has to be, Sydney says without thinking. He winces. Sorry, that was... I'm still... sorry.
Sasha shakes his head and sighs.
They gave me a list too, you know. Second daughters and sons from countries we need to strengthen ties with. They want me to choose this year.
You'll hit it off with someone, I bet, Sydney says. Just, you know, hold out for someone who makes you happy, if you can.
Sasha sighs again and rests his head against the top of Sydney's.
I wish tomorrow weren't going to happen,
he confesses.
He sounds so tired.
You'll do fine, Sydney says with quiet conviction. They sit together for another few minutes before Sasha heaves himself up to standing and holds out a hand to pull Sydney up as well. Sydney sees him to the door and Sasha pauses.
I really am sorry, you know, he says. I know you're not much for strangers.
It'll be okay, Sydney says. Because it has to be. Sasha's mouth quirks.
You should take your own advice.
What?
Hold out for someone who makes you happy, Sasha says.
He kisses Sydney on both cheeks before he slips out the door.
The coronation is a lot of robes and hats and way too much incense. Sydney is wearing his uniform and is seated with the first row of foreign royalty, probably another deliberate attempt to soothe Canada's ruffled feathers. It's not as though he and Sasha were ever actually engaged, though, so he wonders how long his parents are going to keep signaling their displeasure. And it really isn't Sasha's fault. If anything, it's Misha's. But there's nothing to be done about it now. Beginning tomorrow morning, Sydney will have the first of several days of appointments with the princes on the list that Sasha gave him. He has to live through the coronation first. It's still up for grabs that he will, if the incense doesn't get him. The boredom will. Sasha kneels at the altar for what feels like forever, with his robe of state spread out behind him until the patriarch finally crowns him. The rest of the regalia follows, and then the liturgy, with the voices of the choir filling up the cathedral. Sasha's expression when he processes out,
holds none of his uncertainty from the night before. He looks confident and sure and every inch the monarch that Sidney knew he would be, or will grow into, more likely. But Sidney thinks his point stands. He has to wait for all the Russian royalty, court, and the other prominent citizens to process out before it's his turn. He recognizes several men from Sasha's list. They all look very serious, as befits the occasion, but it doesn't fill Sidney with a great deal of hope. And then he sees Zenya. He blinks hard because it can't be, it just can't be. The procession moves along at a stately, glacial pace, and Sidney keeps his eyes fixed on Zenya as though he were a mirage. A mirage in a well-tailored gray suit walking among the Russian attendees. Finally, he comes close, and Sidney has to admit to himself that it's really his Zenya. He knows that face, that mouth, those hangdog eyes, and even though they only spent 2 weeks together, Sidney feels like every inch of Zenya is etched into his memory. Sidney wants to say something to get Zenya's attention, anything to stop him, but he can't. Not without causing a fuss. There's still so many rows to be released before Sidney's, so he can only wait and hope that Zenya doesn't go far. By the time Sidney finally gets outside, Zenya is nowhere to be found. His heart sinks. He isn't sure what he would have said because nothing has changed, but Sidney would give almost anything to see him again. The reception is just a lot. He's been assigned a handler, a court liaison, he says. But Sidney knows a handler when he sees one. Sergei Gonchar seems nice enough, but when he mentions that His Majesty personally asked him to see to Sidney for the duration of his visit, it's the opposite of reassuring. Especially when Sergei goes out of his way to introduce Sidney to a succession of young men, some of whom Sidney definitely recognizes from the list. Sidney would much rather look for Zenya, but he has no way of knowing if he's even at the reception, and anyway, he can see the sense in getting started with finding someone to marry. He'd just much rather talk to this older woman about her Olympic speed skating medals first. He doesn't entirely understand how she's attached to the court, but she seems to be part of some national sports and athletic committee. That was only the third Olympics the women's event was held, she tells him. Really? He says. It was in Grenoble, France. Oh, but you're too young to remember, she says, and pats his arm. What was it like? Sidney asks. He loves a good story, and he loves history, and this woman seems primed to give him both.
Your Highness? Sergei murmurs in his ear. We really should.
Sidney smiles apologetically and allows Sergei to extract him from the conversation and pull him away to meet someone else, and someone else, and someone else. Half an hour in, Sidney drinks a glass of champagne and wonders when Sergei is going to stop this prince from talking to him about space. Sidney finds space interesting enough, but since his contributions to the conversation are limited to vague noises of agreement, he'd just as soon escape. Sergei finally has mercy.
Oh, Your Highness, he says,
and gently touches Sidney's elbow to indicate that he wants him to turn.
May I present His Highness Prince Denis of Magnitogorsk?
Sidney turns to face this prince head-on and feels his eyes go wide.
And his younger brother, Prince Yevgeny,
Sergei adds, clearly as an afterthought. Prince Yevgeny is Zenya, who is staring back at him in shock.
This is His Royal Highness, Crown Prince Sidney of Canada, Sergei continues.
Sidney shakes Denis's hand and bows slightly, and when he holds out his hand for Zenya, Zenya hesitates for long enough it verges on rude. He finally takes Sidney's hand and shakes it perfectly correctly.
Your Highness,
Zenya says slowly.
I'm very pleased to meet you.
He sounds anything but. When Sidney is finally able to politely leave the reception, he does so. He feels off balance, and not just because he's a little drunk. Sergei quickly ushers him on after meeting the Magnitogorsk princes, with the result that Sidney was only able to dart one final glance over his shoulder at Zenya before he was introduced to someone else. At this point, he made the executive's decision to start drinking more. Because Zenya had not looked happy to see him. There was none of the warmth in his eyes that Sidney was accustomed to seeing. Flower helps him take off his uniform and put on a robe. Sidney goes immediately for the new stack of dossiers that Sasha had delivered to his room. Frighteningly enough, Sasha annotated quite a few of them. Sidney sorts through them quickly until he finds Prince Denis. Sasha scrawled in Russian on Denis's folder.
Not much to look at, but good reputation, and anywhere is better than Magnitogorsk.
There's no dossier for Zenya. He's the second son of a line of very minor princes, Nobody would deem him suitable for Sydney's consideration. Even Sasha, who included absolutely every possibility, didn't think Xenia was a possible partner. Sydney's parents definitely wouldn't. Sydney texts Sergei and asks him to bump up his meeting with Prince Denis to tomorrow morning, if at all possible.
I don't know any English, his first prince says bluntly.
Oh, Sydney says, taken aback.
And I don't want to learn, he continues, giving Sydney an unfriendly look.
Well, Sydney says, that might be a problem. He looks down at Prince Nikita's dossier. Sasha wrote,
kind of an asshole, but maybe you're into it.
Sydney is decidedly not into it, or at least not into this one. On the dossier of the second prince, Sasha wrote,
cute, cute, cute. Don't worry, he's 21.
Sydney looks from the dossier back up into the smiling face of Prince Yevgeny Kuznetsov and asks that sincerely. He looks 18 at most. Sydney doesn't care what his birth date says. Do you like hockey? Prince Yevgeny asks, beaming at him. Sydney chats with him easily for the entire allotted half hour, entirely about hockey, and sends him on his way. He marks him firmly off the list. Nice kid, but still a kid. His third prince is the guy who talked to him about space the night before. Prince Ilya is personable, his English is so-so, but he's eager to improve, and he believes in supporting national arts and sciences. Sydney marks him down as a weak maybe. His fourth prince is Prince Denis. He can see the resemblance between the brothers, though he thinks it's not just his own bias making him judge Xenia to be the more handsome of the two. Denis takes a seat across from Sydney, accepts the offer of tea, and looks at him with mild curiosity. Sydney takes a sip of his own tea. Thank you for coming earlier than planned, he says. He's acquired a taste for it over the years, although he's never been able to bring himself to dump as much jam as Sasha prefers.
It was no difficulty, Denis says.
He regards Sydney for a long moment with a mild gaze, and then seems to come to a decision.
I don't want to offend you, but I can't marry you.
You can't, Sydney says, surprised at this first direct refusal. Denis shakes his head.
I'm sorry, but I have responsibilities at home. They may not seem like much to you, but they matter to me. If I'm not there, they will fall to my brother, and that would not be a happy arrangement.
Oh, Sydney says. He figured that's as good an opening as he's going to get. I believe I met him last night?
A minor miracle, Denis says, with a wry twist to his lips. If he had the choice, he would not have come back to Russia for this. He ran off to America for school and never looked back. He's never wanted this life.
Oh, Sydney says again, more quietly. I see. And he does. Xenia was perfectly happy in Pittsburgh. And while he was maybe more well-heeled than Sydney expected, he never would have guessed Xenia was a prince of any kind.
His Majesty speaks well of you, Denis says. I hope one of the others will suit.
Sydney nods, because he doesn't entirely trust himself to speak. Denis puts his tea down, mostly untouched, and they both stand.
Thank you for understanding, Denis says with quiet sincerity.
He bows slightly before leaving. Sydney marks one Magnitogorsk prince off the list. Xenia's name, of course, isn't there, and it's for the best. He wants Xenia to stay happy in Pittsburgh, to volunteer at hockey camp every year, to get his degree and do all the things he dreams of doing. Xenia doesn't want a crown, and Sydney, he would never ask that of him, even if he could. It's a big palace, but that doesn't mean Sydney can avoid seeing people outside of his interviews. For one thing, Sasha likes dropping by Sydney's suite when he can to check on Sydney's progress.
Give me all the ones you liked,
Sasha says, making grabby hands. Sydney hands him the dossiers of his two weak maybes.
But what did you think of them? Sasha asks, looking at the dossiers with a dissatisfied expression. You didn't even write anything.
They were fine, Sydney says. They seemed like they would be okay with moving to Canada.
But did you like them? Sasha presses.
Sydney looks down at his knees. I thought we could get along, he says eventually.
Oh, kitten,
Sasha says, and he sounds upset.
What do you want me to say?
Sydney asks wretchedly.
There's no point in...
I just have to find someone who won't mind, is all.
Mind what?
Sydney sighs and waves a hand vaguely. Being Prince Consort, Canada, me?
What happened to holding out for someone who makes you happy? Sasha asks.
Sydney's fists are clenched so tight his fingernails are biting into his skin. Happiness was a dream that he had this summer. This is real life. My next interview is soon, he says, and Sasha grumbles, but he leaves. Prince Anton seems lukewarm, but he's not hostile, and he seems at least open to the idea. Sydney marks him off as maybe. Prince Artem is actually a delight to talk to, full of stories of his city.
Small town,
he calls it with a fond smile. He seems to be very close to his family, and it is evident that leaving Yaroslav would break his heart. Sydney's not in the business of breaking anyone's heart but his own, so he kindly marks Prince Artem as a no. Several days and many interviews later, Sydney has 6 dossiers in his maybe pile. Nobody is an outright yes, but one of them can work. One of them has to work. He's in the middle of a promising interview with Prince Alexei Imelin when Zhenya bursts into the room.
Zhenya, Alexei says, eyebrows raised in surprise. What's the matter? I think you're in the wrong... Get out,
Zhenya says flatly.
Excuse you? Alexei says. I'm in the middle of a very important meeting with His Highness, so if you'll just turn around and... He's not going to marry you.
Zhenya bites out.
You're not?
Alexei asks Sydney.
I'm not? Sydney asks in disbelief. Don't you think you're being rude? Alexei asks. You don't even know His Highness.
I know him better than you, Zhenya says. Get out.
Alexei looks askance at Sydney, who closes his eyes briefly and nods once.
I'm so sorry, Sydney murmurs. We'll reschedule.
Alexei looks massively offended, so Sydney's not entirely sure that's going to work out. But he does leave, and he doesn't even slam the door, so there's that. Zhenya is still standing in the middle of the carpet looking ready for a fight.
Would you like some tea? Sydney finally asks.
Am I not even worth talking to?
Zhenya demands.
We're talking now, Sydney points out.
Don't. You know what I mean. You've been meeting princes for days. You even met my brother,
Zhenya says. He also looks bewildered and hurt. And that's not at all what Sydney expected. It makes his heart ache to look at.
I did, Sydney says quietly.
Were you going to ask for me?
Zhenya says. Sydney opens his mouth and then shuts it.
Oh, Zhenya says. You weren't, because I'm not someone for Crown Prince of Canada, am I?
That's not...
I'm only good enough when you're pretending to be someone else, Zhenya says,
and that stings. I wasn't pretending, Sydney says hotly. He gets out of his chair. I was just being me, for once.
Don't tell me you don't understand what that meant.
I don't understand you at all,
Zhenya says.
Did you feel anything at all? Did it mean anything to you?
Sydney swallows. Of course it did, he says hoarsely. How can you?
You said goodbye,
Zhenya says.
You came here to marry Sasha, and now that you can't, to find another prince. If it meant something, why didn't you ask for me?
Sydney looks at him helplessly. I can't, he says finally.
You won't,
Zhenya corrects him. He presses his lips together and looks off to the side for a moment.
I thought maybe you were different,
he says.
But you're just like the rest of them. You never put a toe out of line.
That's not fair, Sydney says, as shocked and hurt as if Zhenya had hit him.
No,
Zhenya says.
It's not.
He shakes his head once in apparent disappointment and disgust and stalks out of the room. Sydney stands there with his head bowed in defeat. The clock chimes. He's supposed to be meeting with another prince. That is, if they didn't all retreat from the shouting. Flower appears at his elbow as if by magic.
Your Highness, he says, too gently. Let me reschedule. You should rest.
Sydney swallows around the lump in his throat, and then swallows again. No, he says. I'll meet them. Just give me a moment.
Your Highness, Flower objects.
Zhenya thinks he's all royal responsibility and no heart. But Zhenya doesn't understand at all. He has a heart, and it's breaking, but that won't keep him from his duty. He narrows it down to 3 princes. He should make a decision soon.
It would be easier if he wanted to make a decision at all.
Maybe if you meet with them again,
Sasha suggests.
He looks lost in thought for a moment.
It's kind of like The Bachelor, isn't it?
He says. We should have filmed it. Think of the ratings.
Sydney throws a pillow at him. It's not like The Bachelor, he says, but he cracks a smile, which was doubtless Sasha's intention. Still, there's sense in Sasha's idea. Sydney meets with all 3 again and tries to imagine spending the rest of his life with one of them. He can't. It's close to midnight and Sydney's exhausted, but he can't sleep. His internal clock is all messed up. He thinks about calling down to the kitchens for a snack, but the walk down might do him good.
He's pretty sure he knows where the kitchens are.
He finds them, but it's very late and they're deserted. He doesn't want to get someone out of bed for him. He should be able to rustle up a snack on his own. There's bread on the cutting board, and Sydney cuts a few slices, then starts looking around for something to put on them. He's just pulled a jar of jam out of the fridge when he hears a noise. He jerks around to see Xenia in the doorway. Xenia looks at Sid for a long moment, turns on his heel, and walks out. Great, Sydney thinks. Fantastic, just what his day needed. He slumps into a chair at the small table and debates looking for peanut butter, even though he's unlikely to find it. His personal supply of peanut butter is MIA in a luggage snafu. If he had asked for it, he's sure that someone would have procured it, but he doesn't want to get someone out of bed for a snack. He definitely doesn't want to send them across the city just so he can have exactly what he wants. He hears another noise, and when he looks up, Xenia puts a jar of peanut butter down on the table with an audible thunk. It's even the right brand. Where did you...
I bought it, Xenia says. This afternoon.
Oh, Sydney says, and to his horror, he can feel his eyes well up. Thank you, that's really nice.
Xenia pulls the plate toward him and starts methodically making a sandwich, only stopping to go retrieve another kind of jam from the fridge instead of the one Sydney pulled out.
Not exactly the way you like it, but pretty close,
he says, licking a stray bit of jam from his thumb. He pushes the plate with the sandwich back toward Sydney, and it's such a small thing, really. But he can't imagine any of the other princes doing it.
I wish it could be you, Sydney says hoarsely.
Xenia goes still.
You do?
Yes, Sydney says. He's miserable with how much he wants Xenia.
Then why not ask for me?
Xenia reaches across the table to put his hand on Sydney's.
Did you think I'd say no?
I didn't think you'd want me, Sydney confesses quietly. Or, I guess, not everything that comes with me, and even if you did... I know what I'm supposed to do.
What's that?
Sydney shrugs one shoulder. You know, marry the next best thing to Sasha.
According to who?
Xenia asks. Sydney frowns in confusion.
The next best thing according to who? If it's already decided, why interview?
Oh, Sydney says. Well, there's a list. Actually, no, there are two lists because Sasha didn't like the first one. My parents are so mad about me not being able to marry Sasha like they planned. Sasha says that's why Russia was going to offer me the most eligible princes they had.
But you get to choose,
Xenia says, his brow creased.
Who's it going to be, then? Did you decide?
Sydney bites his lip. No, he says. I know I have to, I just... He shrugged and resigned to despair.
I don't think your parents want you to be unhappy,
Xenia says, and he squeezes Sydney's hand.
That's why you came, isn't it? To find someone you could like enough to marry?
Well... Sydney says, and then stops. I came to do what I should.
You can take responsibility too far, you know.
Xenia says. And he sounds like the Xenia Sydney spent a perfect summer break with. Fond and gentle and slightly exasperated.
They told you to find a Russian prince, and you don't like anything on offer. I know how to order off menu.
That happened once, Sydney said defensively. And his lips are threatening to smile despite himself.
It happened at least 3 times,
Xenia says, and he's smiling outright.
What's once more?
I can't just... You're not a meringue,
Sydney says, hardly able to believe he's arguing about this. You've got a whole life in Pittsburgh, and it's not anything like mine. You don't want to be king.
I don't,
Xenia says.
But I could be your prince, maybe, if you want to ask for me.
Sydney's breath catches. Are you sure?
Ask your parents.
Xenia says.
If they say yes, then I'll come meet you like all the others, and we'll decide. Together.
Okay, Sydney says. He feels almost dizzy with hope. Okay, I can... Wait, when should I...
Eat your sandwich first,
Xenia says.
And get some sleep.
He stands up and leans across the table to kiss Sydney sweetly, like a bookmark until they see each other again. When he finally gets both of his parents on the phone... It's a little bit of a mess. At first, it's because his dad tries to put it on speaker and accidentally hangs up on him instead. And then, when he calls back, he can barely get a word in edgewise.
Now, nobody's expecting you to get married tomorrow,
his dad says.
Your mother and I were thinking your engagement would be about a year. There's plenty to do, and we'll want to give him some time to get acclimated.
Who did you decide on? His mother asks. And without giving him time to answer, she continues.
I really thought you'd get along with that Prince Ilya.
God save him. No, Mom, not Ilya. His dad clears his throat.
I liked Alexei Imelin for you. Did you have a chance to meet him?
Yes, Sydney says. I mean, I met him. He's nice, but he swallows and tries to calm his nerves.
It's a shame about Sasha. I know you're fond of each other,
his mom says kindly.
And we all know how you feel about change, sweetie, but I hope you gave everyone a fair shake.
I did my best, Sydney says.
Well, don't keep us in suspense,
his dad says.
Who'd you pick?
It's now or never. Yevgeny, Sydney blurts out.
Yevgeny?
His parents repeat in unison, and Sydney can hear papers rustling on the other end of the line.
There's no... Oh, wait, on Sasha's list,
his dad mutters. And they're both quiet for a minute.
Honey, are you sure?
His mom asks carefully.
He's just... He seems a little young, to be honest.
Sydney blinks. Zinya is a year older than him. And then it hits him. Not Yevgeny Kotnesov. He yelps.
Oh.
His mom says. There's more papal wrestling.
I don't see another one.
She says.
Troy, he must be on that list.
Which one?
His dad says.
The one in your hand.
She says impatiently. Sydney can't let this go on for a minute longer. Yevgeny Vladimirovich of Magnitogorsk, he says. He's not on the lists. There's silence on the other end.
Baby, we're going to call you right back,
his mom says ominously, and hangs up. It seems like it takes forever, but in reality, it's 20 nauseating minutes before his phone rings again.
Well,
his dad says.
You really like this one, Squid?
Yeah, Sydney says. I really do.
Do you need more time? Is there anyone else you have in mind?
His mom presses. He's the one that I want, Sydney says, with the last of his courage. If that's okay with you. His dad sighs.
He's not who we would have chosen for you,
he says.
But he's still a prince, and if you like each other, that's what we want for you.
Sydney sits with that for a moment, because he knew, theoretically, that his parents wanted the best for him, but he hadn't understood.
Dupuy will call the Chamberlain to make arrangements,
his mom says, all business. Wait, Sydney says. Please, I need to ask him first. I promise we'd talk about it, if you said I could marry him.
Oh,
his mom says, and her tone is a little softer.
When will you talk to him?
His nerves are back, full force. As soon as we hang up, he says, and then looks at the clock. It's barely 6 a.m. After breakfast, he amends.
Good luck,
his mom says.
He likes hockey, right?
His dad asks, and his mom says,
Troy,
before they say their goodbyes and hang up. It's very hard, but Sydney holds out for another hour before he texts Sergei to set up a meeting with one last prince. Sydney waits in the same parlor where he waited for all of the princes, but it feels completely different this time. His future was always on the line, but never his heart, and that makes this infinitely more nerve-wracking. Zenya is 5 minutes late, but he looks as flustered as Sydney feels, running a hand through his hair and tugging at his suit jacket before taking a seat across from Sydney. Just as in all the other appointments, there's a tea tray on the table between them. Sydney picks up the teapot to pour, and then he pauses. I don't know how you take it, he says ruefully. I mean, I can guess, but I don't know for sure.
I can guess for you, too,
Zenya says.
But it seems like the kind of thing we should know if we're going to.
He stops and swallows.
What did your parents say?
They want me to be happy, Sydney says. It feels so strange to say that out loud. And if what makes me happy is you, then they're okay with that. And he looks down at his teacup. I don't know what will make you happy, though, and I want more than anything I want you to be.
Sid,
Zenya says softly, and Sydney looks up.
You want to know what will make me happy?
Sydney knows this is all crazy, to feel like this over a whirlwind summer romance, but he nods, and he means it. He wants the best for Zenya, whatever that means.
3 spoonfuls of jam,
Zenya says.
And I want to finish my degree.
Sid takes in a deep breath. Education is important, he says. How much longer until you graduate?
Next August,
Zenya says. Okay, Sydney says. He spoons jam into Zenya's cup, pours in the tea and the hot water, and hands it to him. What else?
I want to help,
Zenya says, and he's got that determined set to his jaw.
It's why I'm going to school. If I can help with healthcare in Canada, other countries, that's what I want.
Sydney blinks. Okay, he says. It's customary to specialize in philanthropic efforts, after all, and if that's what Zenya wants, Sydney can make sure he's accommodated. What else?
That's a lot already,
Zenya says with a shake of his head. I don't want you to regret this, Sydney says. He bites his lip. I'm not who you thought I was.
Yes, you are, Zenya says. In all the ways that matter, I think you are.
Sydney opens his mouth to say something, but he can't. Zenya is looking at him like he really sees not the prince, just Sydney himself.
Zenya breaks interview etiquette. He puts his cup down and steps around the table to sit next to Sydney on the small sofa.
I don't want you to regret this either,
Zenya says softly and takes one of Sydney's hands.
What would make you happy?
This is more than enough, Sydney says, and he means it. It's so much more than he imagined for himself. Zenya kisses him, sweet and slow. When he pulls back, he says,
I can't just keep you in peanut butter and call it good. What else is important to you?
Sydney looks down at their hands, their fingers interlaced. I want, he says, and stops. Do you think, can we date? Like in Pittsburgh? Can we do that?
You do owe me a mini-golf rematch,
Zenya says, smiling at him. So, yes? Sydney asks.
Yes, of course yes,
Zenya says. And Sydney pulls him in for a kiss, and then another kiss. Sydney feels giddy, like he really can be happy, like he and Zenya can be happy together. You'll marry me? Sydney asks between kisses.
What kind of a proposal is that?
Zenya huffs. He nibbles on Sydney's ear in the way that makes him crazy. I didn't bring a ring, Sydney says, tilting his head to give Zenya better access. Zenya pauses long enough to wrestle a ring off his own finger and take Sydney's hand.
Sydney,
he says, abruptly serious. Sydney slides the ring on without breaking eye contact. Yes, he says. And when they kiss, Zenya's smile is a match for his own. It's been nearly a year since Sydney first went to Pittsburgh. He gets recognized at the airport these days. Americans still care more about British royalty, but Sydney is engaged to a resident of Pittsburgh, and that got plenty of coverage in the local media. It's not as bad as Sydney feared. He makes monthly trips to see Zenya, and even if people now clearly recognize him, they're good at giving them their privacy. It feels almost protective, and Sydney is grateful. Still, there's absolutely no way that Sydney could volunteer for hockey camp this year. It would be a zoo if people knew both he and Zenya would be there every day for 2 weeks. The Pittsburgh media buzz has mostly died down, but Sydney and hockey would bring the Canadian media for sure, and that kind of distraction wouldn't be fair to the kids.
Just come the last day, Zenya wheedles. It'll be a surprise, so nobody will be expecting you. By the time anyone finds out, camp will be over.
You may as well, Joe calls from the other room.
It's not as though Sydney doesn't want to go, after all. So on the last morning, Joe drives him to the rink, and Sydney puts on his skates when the kids are all already on the ice. He has his Lemieux Foundation hat on, and he garners a few curious glances from the kids, who are all supposed to be paying attention to the coach. When they're divided up into groups, Sydney realizes he knows two of the kids. Unlike last year, Katie has both front teeth, and Noah is missing one of his. They're both smiling from ear to ear.
Hey guys, Sydney says. Have you been having a good camp?
The kids say yes or nod, but it's Noah who blurts out.
Are you really a prince?
Yes, Sydney says.
Gino too?
Yep, Sydney says. The rest of the kids are wide-eyed, and the girl, probably the youngest of the group, says, Are you really going to play hockey with us?
For sure, Sydney says.
Zenya sends a puck his way. Sydney takes the pass cleanly and meets Zenya's warm smile with one of his own.
Okay, everyone, Sydney says. Are you ready to get started?
The end. Thanks for listening.